believe every person has a right to basic knowledge of how to optimize their mind, body, and spirit. Here, I bring to you influential individuals and ideas to help you live a more healthy, fulfilling life. I'm Julie Fouché, and I'd like to welcome you to Pursuing Health. Welcome to episode 13, part 2 of Pursuing Health. I've had a lot of requests for an episode about nutrition over the past few months, so I'm excited to bring you this new 2-part episode with Umaro Cadogan. I first connected with Umaro through one of my sponsors, Pure Pharma, in the fall of 2014, and I've been really impressed with his multi-angle approach to nutrition. He lives in Denmark, and he's an adjunct professor of nutrition and functional medicine at the University of Western States. There, he works directly with individuals and groups, including professional athletes and military groups, as a nutritional therapist, and he's also a well-known author, chef, and lecturer on the topics of nutrition and functional medicine in Denmark and across the world. I sat down with Umaro at the 2015 CrossFit Games, and in part 1 of this episode, he discussed his story and his general approach to nutrition. Here, in part 2, we'll talk more specifically about his nutrition advice for athletes, as well as for supporting the body while recovering from injury. As always, please remember to subscribe and rate Pursuing Health on iTunes, and share your feedback using hashtag JFHealth on social media. So with that, let's get started with the second part of episode 13 with Umaro Cadogan. So let's talk a little bit more about athletes specifically. Yeah. So we talked about just general advice for the general population, making sure you have all those big stones in place, like the sleep, the nutrition, the exercise, stress, some supplements that you might start taking. But if you're really trying to dial it in because you're a high-level athlete, what are some of the additional things that you might start to look at?
Well, for high-level athletes, you definitely want to make sure you don't become carb phobic. I see, you see a lot of people who do very well by reducing their carbohydrates when they're sedentary. They have lots of belly fat, intra-abdominal fat, low lean mass, and their metabolism is quite slow. And so they do well on a sort of vegetables and lean meat, fish only diet until they lose weight and they get in better shape. But once you start moving more, I see a lot of elite athletes who actually are underperforming or who can't recover properly because they think, I must be on a strict paleolithic diet or I must be on a ketogenic diet. And if you, once you need to generate lots of energy really quickly, there's no way around glucose. You see, even if you're keto adapted, fat's just too slow to do anything high intensity. It might work well if you have to run like a triple marathon where it's not speed but it's just being able to go steadily and having an energy source that you can access constantly because you won't be able to load enough carbohydrates into your system. But you know, when you have CrossFit, you have weightlifting, you have football, soccer, all these things, you definitely want to make sure you're not carb phobic. That it's not an excuse for eating Skittles all day long, drinking lots of soft drinks, but make sure you have potatoes, rice, chickpeas, lentils, all these legumes, these foods that contain starch.
That's great advice.
So it's very simple, but for a lot of athletes, like, whoa, this works really well. Yeah.
Right. Duh. So you have to start paying more attention to it.
Exactly.
I think that is great advice, and I've heard that from a number of CrossFitters who started out with eating almost entirely protein and fat and then realized maybe I'll add in some more brown rice or white rice or oatmeal, some other sources of carbohydrates, and they started feeling a lot better.
Yeah. And I see with people who do CrossFit, when initially they start, you know, people and they're out of shape, they do well with the low carb, high plant, high protein, rather than the high fat, do a moderate fat diet. But as I said, once you start getting close to peak performance, fat and proteins are going to be too slow an energy source, even if you have really good metabolism. So you also see the shift people, as they get ripped and they get really strong and explosive, they need to start adding more carbohydrates. Or they either won't be able to perform or they won't be able to recover.
And do you recommend that they eat those only post-workout or spread throughout the day?
I think first we should just be very, you know, have see what works best. Some people find it best to have them post-workout. Some people find it better to have them pre-workout. Some people do better having them spread out through the day. So what works best for you? You know, there's the research is not that clear. Some people say, oh, I have them post-workout. It works wonders. Well, if it works wonders for you, good. Do that.
Keep doing
and
it.
Other people say, but I feel much better if I have them spread out through the day. Do right. that. So, you know, people, we know people are different genetically, physiologically. Right. So it would make sense. You can't do this one size fits all. But certainly, I'd say make sure you get some carbohydrates post-workout and sometimes also pre-workout. I mean, also, if people have followed my Instagram, I post quite a few pictures with bananas. And
yes,
that's because
I've seen them.
I'm on this rampage that people do all these super advanced pre and intra and post-workout things. And usually, they don't need them. There might be special instances. Or if you do 7 workouts a week, you do multiple training sessions a day. Yes, but for the average person who works out 4 or 5 times a week, you know, they buy all these things. It's like you just need to eat some carbohydrates in the meal before and then have a banana to replenish your stores. You're fine.
That's, keep it simple.
Keep it simple. If it needs to be complex, do it. But if not, don't waste your time on it.
That's great advice.
So certainly not for athletes. And then, of course, also the other thing for elite athletes, I'd say, is making sure that you get enough omega-3 fatty acids, because I meet so many elite athletes who are constantly dealing with inflammation. Mm-hmm. And inflammation is going to be part of the game when you push yourself hard. That wear and tear, there's no way to avoid inflammation. So it's not a matter of shutting down inflammation, but managing it. And omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D as well is really important. And also getting enough vegetables. So I actually meet quite a few endurance athletes who say, well, vegetables are too bulky, so I'll eat white rice, I'll have all these soft drinks, I'll have all these refined carbohydrates because I don't, you know, I have to eat enough calories.
Right.
And so vegetables are sort of...
You're missing some micronutrients.
They're missing micronutrients, and so they're constantly suffering from inflammation or they can't recover properly. And then when we say start adding in lots of vegetables, berries, and fruits, sometimes we might have to do a lot of that as juice because they simply don't have enough gastric volume to eat them on top of getting enough calories and enough carbohydrates and protein. But once they do that, you give the body the tools to manage inflammation. So you want a bit of inflammation post-workout. That's actually what's going to facilitate repair, but also going to facilitate a lot of your adaptations to training. So you get stronger, you get better endurance, your muscles grow. That needs just a bit of inflammation to kick off that process. So if you suppress it completely medically, then you have a problem. You might avoid a bit of pain, but you actually also take away, whittle away at the training response you'll get, or even healing. We can there are studies emerging, long-term use of anti-inflammatories might save you a bit of pain, but the healing process is slowed down, so whatever tissue damage you have, it'll take you a lot longer to recover from.
So again, eat your vegetables.
Eat vegetables and then
healthy
fats, that works, and vitamin D as well, because that's also important for regulating inflammation. And then also probiotics, because if you push yourself really hard, we know that both mental and physiological stress will actually decimate your gut flora.
Yes.
So getting probiotics, there's a lot of research out of Russia on that, and then it's been sort of discounted, you know, in the West, Russians, crazy people, blah, blah, blah. Also out of Japan, but it's there and it's really high quality. And it's been looked at for athletes and saying, well, they do better because they have better control of inflammation, they have better nutrient uptake, they have better recovery, their immune system is stronger, so they won't all of a sudden be out with a cold and then they can't train for 2 weeks and then they get behind with the plan and so forth. So that as well, I think is important. And then, with sports nutrition supplements, there are a few basic things that work really well. So creatine works really well for strength, muscle growth, and explosive power. And it's very well tested. And it's not just for weightlifters or sprinters, like for CrossFit. You get lots of things out of creatine.
Lots of explosive movements.
Yeah, exactly. You get that. And even, I said, for endurance athletes, sometimes they find that, I actually get a bit of sprint power. So if you can sprint at the end of a marathon, that's important.
And without adding too much weight, I know I've experimented with just smaller doses spread throughout the day and not necessarily using a loading phase. And when you do that, you don't actually gain much body weight, but you still get some of the benefit.
Exactly, yeah. So that certainly is a good old classic. Beta-alanine is also quite interesting. Okay. It gives you this buffer, so when you're doing high-intensity work, you can go for longer. The best studies are in 800-meter runners, and they will take 3-4 seconds off their time.
Wow.
And it's in the second half of the race. So they run it's not that they run faster initially, but after 400 meters, no matter how fit you are, you'll slow down because you accumulate lactic acid and so forth. And if you can sort of offset that just a bit, then you can keep on going for longer before fatigue sets in or before lactic acidosis slows you down. So 3-4 seconds is quite significant for a, you know, an 800 meter run. So that's also, and especially if you're looking at CrossFit, I mean, where you get all these things where you accumulate lactic acid and you get into fatigue. So that's basic. And then I say it's not a supplement, but food, but beetroot juice. I mean, if you look at the research on that, it's so, and I like it because it's compelling and it's food, which I really like. But, you know, the studies, 0.5 liter of beetroot juice a day, just 1 week, and you get 2-8% improved oxygen uptake and utilization. That's quite significant. Yeah. Or also from the same group, they did time to exhaustion at max intensity. So you can you put them on a treadmill or a Concept 2 rower or a spinning bike, and you have them go right at their anaerobic threshold, right under that. Mm-hmm. And they have to stay there, which is pretty painful. And then if you give them beetroot juice 0.5 liter a day for 1 week before, they can go for an additional 90 seconds before they have to tap out.
Wow.
That's, you know,
that's a lot.
1.5 minutes.
90 seconds.
So, I mean, think of CrossFit or any type of sport, you know, I say that's significant. So that also is, you know, so they're simple, but they're really effective. Caffeine can be good, but you have to be careful with how often you use it. So it actually works, but only in people who are caffeine naive. So if you drink coffee all the time, have Red Bull, whatever, it's not going to work. But if you're well rested, well fed, good shape, not stressed, then a bit of caffeine can make you perform above above what you do otherwise. So there are studies that are quite compelling, but they're all done on like 22 to 25 year old students who do, you know, who are like athlete scholarships. They haven't had any caffeine for the week leading up to the study.
Okay.
They're well rested, well fed, and well nourished, not stressed, had enough sleep, and then you give them a couple of cups of coffee or some caffeinated soft drink, and they perform better. But that's just
not many most of the population.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So and caffeine still might, if you're really tired, it might change your perception of the fatigue. It doesn't really give you energy, it just makes you not feel the fatigue, which you know, like if you were at games, and so you might use that to get through a workout, but when you do it that way, it comes at a price, because you're pushing beyond physiological barriers where your body would normally stop you. And the question is, if you do, you know, if you do that all the time, what price do you pay? Maybe, you know, it's like the interest rate on that energy loan is going to be quite steep.
Right You might not want to go there.
No.
Wow. Okay. So that's some great advice for athletes specifically with adding more carbohydrates and then continuing the same vitamin D, fish oil, probiotics, but also you talked about creatine, beta-alanine,
beetroot juice,
and possibly caffeine, as long as you're not already very sensitive to it.
Yeah, that. And then also I'll say magnesium, though it's not probably, it's not a performance enhancer, but I just see a lot of top level athletes who are low on magnesium. Because, you know, just if you sweat, you lose magnesium as well. And so you lose a lot of magnesium through sweat, and magnesium certainly for cramping, but also for energy production. Magnesium is actually really important, and for sleep and regulating the stress response. So when you're doing something like CrossFit, you want your adrenals to go all out when you're doing your workout or in competition, but then you want them to calm down afterwards. You know, then you get the best of both worlds, the sort of immediate and performance enhancing effects of stress hormones, but you want to shut that down afterwards, or you'll get into trouble, then they'll start doing damage to your body. So magnesium will help do that, so will omega-3 fatty acids, and that, you know, actually also good old vitamin C is really interesting. So I've seen a few athletes so far, I'm thinking they should have had vitamin C before, and especially after workout, some of the athletes who basically tapped out during the Murph. I would say if I were their nutrition performance coach, then I would put them on vitamin C after an episode like that, because you can see that vitamin C enhances recovery after severe physiological stress.
Wow, that's great advice. Well, I hope some of those girls are getting vitamin C right now.
Yeah.
Definitely. And that's actually a great segue, because I want to talk a little bit more about nutrition for recovery.
Yeah.
So we talked after I ruptured my Achilles and had surgery, and you gave me some great tips. To try to speed my recovery, and vitamin C was one of those, because it's obviously going to help with tendon repair. But can you talk a little bit more about your approach to recovery?
From an injury.
Just from an general, some sort of musculoskeletal injury.
So for recovery, we want to make sure that we manage inflammation, not suppress it.
Okay.
Also, we don't want it out of control, because then it's like a bonfire out of control, so you just keep on doing damage. But if possible, you want to avoid long-term use of anti-inflammatories. You can use them immediately to take some of the immediate pain, but otherwise they might actually interfere with healing. So you want to make sure that you have the nutrients necessary for healing, and vitamin C becomes really crucial here because vitamin C is so important in the formation of new collagen. So vitamin C helps you make strong but supple collagen. So almost think like you have cables of steel that are highly flexible. That's what you want your collagen to be like, you know, with your tendons and ligaments. Right. So vitamin C is important for that. And vitamin C helps regulate inflammation as well. And then actually hydrolyzed collagen makes sense. There's not a lot of research, but there's some research because you use it for making tendons, ligaments, and also cartilage. A lot of people, like, you know, like if they tear an Achilles tendon, full or partial rupture, think, well, glucosamine must be good because it helps with osteoarthritis of the knee. But glucosamine only seems to work for elbows and knees specifically, not when you're, and that's for the cartilage and the joint. But when you're torn a tendon, it's the physiology is a bit different. So what seems the best bet would actually be to do hydrolyzed collagen to make sure you have enough building blocks to rebuild those tendons really fast or as fast as possible. Or you can do bone broth. There seems to be some collagen released into that as well.
Which I've been doing a lot of that, and I've actually come to like it. It's it's kind of like that cup of tea or cup of coffee if you just drink it by itself.
And I mean, it's like the world's oldest comfort food.
Right.
And I mean, and you have studies on chicken soup helping with like upper airway respiratory infections, so it does a lot of good. When you so vitamin C and some collagen makes a lot of sense, and those basics with vitamin D and omega 3 fatty acids. We also know zinc is important for recovery, but again, if you do a multivitamin or like ZMA, zinc, magnesium mixture might as well. That's really important for recovery. And those are very basic things. And then if you have a problem regulating inflammation, you can also try some of the herbal anti-inflammatories like curcumin from turmeric, ginger, boswellia. What else? You have actually rosehip extract. There's some good research on that as well. Because a lot of these botanicals, if you take them at low to medium doses, they will not completely suppress inflammation, but they will take the top off, so to speak, and so you still get enough basal inflammation to facilitate healing and repair. So I think that's important. And then, although I work mostly with nutrition, there are also some, you know, there's in terms of rehabilitation, the proper kind of training is really important. And what you want to do to make tendons and ligaments regrow is you want to do long, slow, sustained, controlled loading. They respond completely differently from muscles, so you want to do strength training, but not for your muscular strength, neither explosive or for like slow grinding, but what will make your structural strength increase. And that's where you have to slow the tempo down. So you can, like, if you do, you know, if you have firm Achilles tendon tear, when you get to the point where you can start doing some calf raises or just move your ankle, you want to do a tempo 4-2-4-2. So you're going to go for extension or contraction in 4 seconds, hold it for 2 seconds, and then reverse the movement 4 seconds. But it has to be completely slow and controlled. No acceleration, no deceleration, no plyometric loading.
Right.
And there are studies out of Copenhagen University with Professor Henning Langberg, where for people who needed to do, had partial or full reconstruction of their knee or Achilles tendon, or had, you know, shoulder problems like tear of some of the ligaments or muscles. And when they do that protocol with the slow, controlled strength training, either two training sessions per day with body weight or 3 times a week with barbells or dumbbells or some sort of external loading, within 12 months, they could usually increase the thickness of ligaments and tendons by about 50%.
Wow.
And also increase flexibility. So they're thicker, they're stronger, but more flexible.
Okay.
But only if people weren't on anti-inflammatories all the time. Yeah. So then when they did those studies and they had a group of people who were on anti-inflammatories, not just, or painkillers, not just once in a while, but constantly, the training seemed not to work. So yeah, so that's really slow training. And you want to do the full range of motion because you want to make sure the new collagen and the new tissue you're creating, that it's, you immediately get it into shape. So you want to, you can actually mold to connect to tissue when it regrows by doing controlled loading. So make sure that you, the healing Achilles tendons, it gets flexible, it's long enough, and also gets strong enough. But of course, you don't want to start loading it too early. But the moment you can do that,
then you start working on it.
You can start working on it. And also, I say, you know, with CrossFit, I'd say probably the most common injury I see is that people quickly get to a point where their stamina and their strength lets them exert a sort of loading that they cannot sustain structurally. So they don't they have the physical strength and stamina to do all these loaded movements, fast movements, but they do not have the they do not have the structural strength, and so you need to train that. And of course, if you get an injury, but I'd like to see more prehab with that. So people spending time very slowly, moving slowly, even though they say, but I want to do these things really fast and explosively. But you need to slow down initially, so you actually build a sort of structural strength, base that enables you to handle that loading later on. I do some work with the Danish Royal Lifeguards, not as lifeguards on the beach, but you know, the elite regiment that protects the Queen and the royal family. So I know their physical trainer really well, and I spar with him about nutrition and health. And they introduced CrossFit as because they needed a highly effective way to get both the initial recruits into shape, also to stay in shape. Also, because he works not just with the lifeguards, but also the Danish equivalent of the Navy SEALs and Green Berets and so forth, and find something they could do when they were, you know, stationed in Afghanistan or Iraq and other hot spots. And so they found CrossFit really effective because you get all these multiple domains of fitness, and you can do it with simple equipment, and the time invested is not that long, and you still stay rather fit. But initially, they had a lot of injuries with the new recruits. So they said, okay, for the first 6 months, we're not going for any personal records. We want you to be progress very slowly. We'll do lots of technique, and we'll do lots of build a structural strength foundation, and then we'll let you loose. Then you can go there compete against each other and go for AMRAPs on time and, you know, each minute on the minute workout where you push hard. And once they had that initial half year basic training, so to speak, all of a sudden they didn't have the injuries later on because they built a structural strength base that enabled them to handle the loading they subjected themselves to afterwards.
Yeah, that's huge. I think in 6 months too, people become so impatient and they say, okay, I'll do a month of my on-ramp and then I'm good to go. But I think that, you know, CrossFit's charter of mechanics, consistency, and then intensity, it's so important, and it can take that long. 6 months, you just need to be patient and build your capacity there so you can handle the intensity. Exactly. So that's a great, great to know.
And I mean, and I think like half a year, if you, you know, you're in your 20s or 30s or even 40s, you haven't exercised for a while, taking half a year to get the foundation in place, I mean, in
the grand scheme of things, it's
grand scheme of things,
it's
but a second.
Right.
And you'll be so grateful later on because the price you pay, I mean, it's can be pretty severe. So I think that. And I think, I mean, not just with CrossFit, but a lot of elite athletes, they have to think longer term and build a base. One of my really good friends is Peter Gell, who used to be one of the world's best badminton players. And he's now been hired as the national team coach for France. And he's also worked with the Danish national team. What's interesting with Denmark and badminton is when we look at our junior players and our under 21s, they're good, but they never win world championships, the Olympics, or European championships because they say, we'll spend that time building a base, but then they peak after 21 and they can compete with the Chinese and the Koreans and the Indonesians, who also have long, proud traditions within badminton. And they say, we'll sacrifice that top-end performance during your junior years and under 21s, because then you peak and you have the foundation. Here, of course, we're talking more about skill and being able to strategic thinking. But it means that in the long run, they do so much better.
It pays off.
Even though they might not get these immediate, well, they get benefits immediately, but they don't, like, get these super results immediately, but in the long term.
Pays off. Yeah, that's a great lesson for life in general, right? Most of the best things come when you put the time in or make those sacrifices ahead of time, and then they will pay off in the end. So that's great advice. And I love everything that you were talking about with athletes and with rehab, and also how you emphasize the fact that you need those few things in place first. Regardless of whether you're doing CrossFit, whether you're an elite athlete, whether you're rehabbing an injury, you can never underestimate just solid nutrition, sleep, stress, you know, doing your exercise and building that foundation first. So that's huge. And and I love that we can talk about all these details, but it's great for people to know you need to address those big things first.
Yeah. I mean, there's the like 20-80 principle, 20% of what you do will get you 80% of the results. So those 20%, that's sound sleep, proper nutrition, not making it more advanced than what you can handle. So it works in everyday life. stress reduction, that will get you 80% of the way. Then if you want to be super elite, you can do a whole lot more. But if you're still omitting what gets you 80% of the results, why would you bother with the rest?
Right.
Whether you want to be the world's best or your national, you know, champion, or you just want to have fun mm-hmm. with your body and be healthy.
Right. Well, I want to end with three questions that I ask everyone. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this will be easy for you.
Yep.
But we're gonna go first with the three things that you do on a regular basis that you think have the biggest positive impact on your health.
Yeah, well, for me, it's certainly movement. So I exercise every day. Mm-hmm. And I always scale exercise to what I feel like on the day. I like to push myself, but I'm now at the age of 38. I'm clever enough to understand if today I have a really hard workout planned and I don't feel like it, you know, or I can feel it's too much,
right.
I'll downscale it. So I make sure that I move and exercise more or less every day.
Mm-hmm.
I do that. And then the vegetable thing, I just make sure I get my mm-hmm. vegetables every day. So find whatever way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Make juices, buy vegetable juices, eat lots of vegetables. When mm-hmm. I travel, I always bring like greens powder with me, and I also bring freeze-dried beetroot powder, so I can, if everything else fails, I can at least put it in a shaker and get that. And then, I mean, vegetables, and then I also make sure I get my protein in place because that helps keep me satiated and so forth. So yeah, so those are two big things. And then for me, also supplementation is important because whether I'm cured from those diseases or have them under control, that can be debated from now and forever.
Right.
But there are just certain things I know I need to have lots of omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, probiotics, and I also need to take a few more esoteric things for energy production because I had that chronic fatigue mm-hmm. syndrome. And if I don't take them, I can feel within half a week to a week that things start going downhill again.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, those are extremely important. If I don't do them, I know I suffer immediately. And then sleep is in there as well. Although with my traveling, I don't always get my 8 hours that I should. But if I weren't on top of those other things, that would really decimate me. But I can get away with less when I really have to.
Okay. How about one thing that you think would help a lot, but maybe this is sleep for you, but that you don't always do, or you haven't been able to implement it into your life yet?
Sleep during certain periods mm-hmm. is definitely one that, because mm-hmm. I can feel the difference as well. I can still perform quite well when I'm not quite getting 8 hours, but when I get my 8 hours, that's
when you're at your best.
Yeah.
Okay. And then just overall, if you could explain what you think a healthy life looks like to you.
Well, I think a healthy life is, I think a great analogy also to get people motivated is to think of what everything you do, what you eat, but also everything you do, it's like a dialogue with mm-hmm. your body. So you're saying something and you're saying it in a particular tone of voice and you'll get a response. So if you eat something, I mean, essentially there are two ways you can start a conversation. Hey, great to see you. Fantastic, right? And people, or you can extend your middle finger and say something rather rude, in which case people will be like, oh, well, wait a moment, I'm not going to cooperate. And so if you think, you know, for your body, think of everything you do, what you eat, the input you give your body in terms of exercise, in terms of how you interact with people, what you do,
mm-hmm.
experience. It's either like a declaration of love, in which case your body becomes very cooperative, or it's, you know, a middle finger extended right in your face with rather rude words being said at the same time. And in that case, your body will respond in kind.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then
you don't want to fight with your body.
No, exactly. And then that's where you'll get disease and discomfort and accelerated aging, all those things. So mm-hmm. for me, a healthy life or a good life is really about finding out what things can you do, either keep on doing or change. So all the input you give yourself, whether we're thinking at the molecular level, but also, mm-hmm. you know, like what people do you interact with, what sort of relationships do you have, make sure that you get mostly something where you say, this is love. And might once in a while be that you eat something that's not healthy, but I'll drink half a bottle of really good wine or champagne because of the enjoyment or the company. That's fine. That's still adding to that pool of self-love, so mm-hmm. to speak. And look at what areas am I doing things or subjecting myself to things that, if I think about it, it's not really a declaration of love. Mm-hmm. And how can I do something about that?
That is wonderful. I've never heard it like that before, but that's a great way to think about health.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Well, thank you.
We learned a lot of great things today.
Good.
So that was Umaro, and we will talk to you again later. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. I'd love to hear your feedback, so please leave comments under this post on my website, juliefouché.com. Also, if you like what you hear, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and give us a rating. And share your thoughts on social media. You can use the hashtag JFHealth with any feedback or questions or ideas for future episodes. So thanks again for listening, and we will catch you next time on Pursuing Health.